You are listening to episode number 239 of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. I am your host, Ben, a.k.a. The Marvelous Iggy. Joining me is my stout editor-in-chief, a.k.a. my newsboy, Mr. Brian Powers. Welcome back once again.
Hey, I am here, and I am bitter because we didn't have the first football game of the season yesterday, and that kind of ticked me off a little bit, taking away my football.
Oh, yeah, yesterday was the Hall of Fame game, wasn't it?
Supposed to be, but the game was called off due to alleged conditions of the field not being, players apparently were complaining that it was hard as concrete in some places, so they called the whole thing off. So.
Well, that sucks.
Yeah, it does suck. But my Patriots play on Thursday, first preseason game. So we'll see how they do with Garoppolo, because he's going to get more snaps this season, the first four games at least. So.
Well, Brady's old, and nobody cares about the preseason.
Hey!
He's going to retire one day. You're going to have to go through what I went through when Brett Favre. Well, he's going to take his talents somewhere else first. Then
God, you live in Texas.
So?
Yeah, I don't know. I went to high school with a kid who was a hardcore Green Bay Packers fan for no other reason than he picked him one day just out of a hat or something like that. And it was
sometimes
like...
sometimes all it takes.
Yeah,
sometimes. And of course, joining us is old man Whirlyberg himself, Jonathan Coatwright. Jonathan, welcome back.
Glad to be back here in good old warrior land after serving a bunch of Oaky Asgardians at Whoppers all week. And they just can't handle their mead. They have to have that cheap beer.
Can you imagine just some full stag looking dude wandering in? And
I do. I see them every day.
I bet you
I have to come in every day.
I bet you Volstagg spends a lot of time at Walmart. Like at the Oklahoma Walmart.
They do. And then they go over to the Game Store and comic book store that's not too far down.
Oh my god.
So
can you imagine though, like when you're in Oklahoma? Like I know Asgardians tend to probably stay in Asgard when they're in Oklahoma, but I would love if like you're just like you're John, you know, you're going to Walmart after a long day of work, right? And then all of a sudden you see fucking Thor fly down and just go pick up like some food from Walmart. He goes to the deli. Gets chicken wings or something for some reason. What is this delicacy that you eat? You just find that image so funny.
Yeah. I'd be like, okay, I think I've inhaled too much meth fumes from across the way. I'm not sure.
Somebody needs to write that comic of just like the it's like Marvel's, but a comedic sort of way where like instead of like these earth-shattering events, you capture the most mundane shit that some of these characters do in costume. Like you, like Captain America's catching the subway because like there's investigation problems. Like is that Captain America? Is he Captain America?
Just like them doing everyday things.
It would be hilarious. I mean, you wouldn't see guys like Tony Stark or anything because they're fucking rich. But you're in Times Square. All of a sudden, you see Bruce Banner. You know.
Yeah. All right. More likely than not, you probably run into Hawkeye a ton in New York City. Just him wandering around. Like, yeah. Hey, Hawkeye, what are you doing? Buying stuff. You know, Hawkeye needs things, I imagine. You catch him buying arrows, just like from the Walmart gate, like hunting.
No, he goes to Sports Authority for his arrows. He doesn't go to fucking Walmart. He goes to Sports Authority.
I bet he goes to Bass Pro Shop. I bet he's that guy.
If he lived in Texas, he would
probably... Or he goes to the Academy.
Does he go to Cabela's? Or do y'all have Cabela's?
I don't have a Cabela's up here.
I don't, but...
I'd imagine Hawkeye gets his stuff from either Sports Authority or Cabela's.
We don't even have Sports Authority up here anymore. We got Walmart, we got friggin' Bass Pro, and we got Dick's Sporting Goods. That's what we have up here.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Either way, let us know what you think, if you think of that, fellow listener. The most mundane, just seeing superheroes do the most mundane shit. Because I think that could be entertaining done right. But We're not about the mundane shit. We are the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. We are a podcast dedicated to all things Marvel related. And when we mean all things Marvel related, we mean all things Marvel related. So, while the media is centered around Warner Brothers and DC Comics this past weekend because of their latest release of Suicide Squad, Marvel kind of just said, you know what, we're just not going to release news. But we got some news pieces to talk about before we go on to the actual books. So, Brian, we got some interesting shit happening. A certain Spider-Man villain is returning.
This one's actually kind of cool. I kind of like this one. But as you mentioned, Iggy, it was a slow week this week. Apparently, when one of the companies concedes a movie date, they concede like the whole week surrounding that, just news-wise, where it's just like, yeah, you can have the media this weekend. We get them next week.
David Ayer did say, fuck Marvel, so...
He did, but then Stanley came out and said, yeah, we cool. So you got the ambassador of Marvel pretty much saying, yeah, I guess he's all right.
Yeah, because Marvel at this point, like, look what you've been doing since 2008.
Yeah, I know. So. Marvel's like going to probably, Marvel is one of the biggest employers, I think, in Hollywood right now. And you can't go around saying, fuck Marvel.
Well, we know, David Ayer's going to direct a Marvel movie one day. Just watch.
Probably.
Actually, get David Ayer to direct a Thunderbolts movie, I'd be down. Like, legit, get him to do a Thunderbolts movie.
Legit. Oh, God, that's funny. But, yeah, we're not talking about David Ayer on this podcast. We're talking about a returning villain, none other than Dr. Otto Octavius himself, a.k.a. Dr. Octopus. We're making his grand return in the Spider-Man event Clone Conspiracy, having to do with the Jackal. And probably a clone or two, more than likely. However, the circumstances surrounding his return currently are a mystery. How he came back, why he's back now, and what he's been up to, that will be revealed as the series goes on. However, they do make note that apparently Otto's consciousness has been living on inside of a robot at Parker Industries, which Peter, I guess, didn't notice. Apparently, Otto's been just kind of acting like as an inside man at Parker Industries. Which is weird.
You think he would know?
You would think he would know? God. Or, you know, I don't know. But point is,
Otto Octavius... If you read the story, you would understand. Yeah.
God. This is the first time we'll see Otto Octavius back in his proper body since before Superior Spider-Man started. Since before the whole body swap shenanigans began. So... that is, I think, something to be talked about among Spider-Man fans. I mean, how... Iggy, obviously, you kind of take a step back from Spider-Man in recent years, but were you still reading when Otto Octavius was still running around?
No. I have read Superior Spider-Man since then, because I heard so much good things, and generally that's the best Dan Slott stuff I've read in a long time because it was so different than what was before. But I don't... You know why I don't care about this?
Why don't you care about this?
It's still going to be Dan Slott.
You think he's had the reins for too long?
I think it's time for a new Spider-Man writer. I mean, granted, J. Mike Straczynski had it for 9 years, but was it 9 years? I think it was 9 years.
No, it was more like 5 or 6.
Was it? He took over in like 2000, didn't he? Because he wrote the September 11th. Well, whatever, it doesn't matter. The point is, any new Spider-Man comic news will not excite me until it's a different writer. You know who should write Spider-Man? You know who I think could nail Spider-Man?
Who?
Nick Spencer, the current Captain America writer.
The Morning Glories guy?
Dude, the dude has a... If you've read Superior Foes of Spider-Man, or even his current image book, The Fix, the guy understands humor.
I read some of Superior Foes. It wasn't that bad, actually. I actually quite enjoyed it for what it was.
Yeah, the humor, like, humor is a huge component to Spider-Man for me. And not slapstick humor, but, like, Nick Spencer's humor always felt natural and hilariously funny. And I feel like you combine him with a character like Peter Parker, and he could tell stories forever with that character. You know, I mean, he's even in his Captain America run, there's still sort of bits of goofiness. But, man, I'm going to tell you right now, I don't give a shit about Doc Ock. I don't care about Peter Parker cosplaying as Steve Jobs. I just have no interest in anything Spider-Man related until, unless it's official, Dan Slott is officially leaving, and good riddance.
Yeah, yeah, I kind of get that sense too. I mean, I was never a huge Spider-Man guy to begin with, so for me, this is more kind of a shoulder shrugging type of emotion, but I do... God, when was the last time they actually had Otto? I mean, I think the last time I think he was actually really, like, a big deal before Superior was it the Gauntlet? God, was it that far back?
Yeah, because it was Amazing Spider-Man sort of, Amazing Spider-Man 600 that brought that incarnation of Doc Ock. Like, you know, the sort of concussion, the one who he's basically close to dying sort of aspect of it, which was a brilliant idea at the time.
Yeah, it was very cool, and I thought it was something different, and that's what I chimed in with the Gauntlet more than anything else, because they brought back all the classic Spider-Man villains and stuff. Like, the Rhino parts of that storyline were to die for. Such well-written stuff. But the Otto Octavius stuff wasn't bad either. I enjoyed that. I think, was that JRJR who did the art on that one, too?
But, on the 600 issue? Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, as far as Doc Ock coming back goes, I mean, who didn't see that coming? You knew he was going to come back eventually in the proper form. So I'm happy if Spider-Man fans are happy, but I'm just kind of like...
What about me? I'm a Spider-Man fan. I'm not happy.
Well, yeah, but you're a Spider-Man fan who doesn't read Spider-Man.
And I'm dead inside because of it.
Is that why you have the Michael Jordan crying meme as your picture on Skype?
That's because people hate on X-Men Apocalypse for no fucking reason. If you don't know, my Skype avatar is crying Jordan as
Oh, you know what else I just thought Apocalypse. Of too? They just recently announced they're making the new Electro a woman. Believe it or not, I think I heard that. Yeah, that
everybody's.
Was
Everybody's, you get a vagina, you get a vagina, everyone
everybody
gets a
vagina. Who wants a double X chromosomes? Line on up.
I mean, yeah. I'm not surprised.
I mean, Spidey's villains are in such a state of flux nowadays. It's hard to keep up with even, he's not the same character anymore. The first issue I picked up of him with the whole Parker Industries thing, he was jetting around the world like a spy, and it was like,
it's so
like he was
a
Mockingbird and S.H.I.E.L.D., and it's like, what the
it's
fuck
so
is this?
It's so far removed from what Spider-Man needs to be. At this point,
it's not Spider-Man. So I mean, it's kind of a hollow thing, because even if I did care about Spider-Man, which I really don't, it's a hollow victory, you know, because Spider-Man Otto Octavius coming back into a realm where Peter Parker's not Peter Parker anymore, you know. So
no, he's Steve Jobs.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, and is it all right if I chime in now? Or
oh yeah, yeah, you go right ahead, John boy.
I mean, I'm not trying to interrupt. I am, having read the Superior Spider-Man arc, which, by the way, good title, recommended trade reading. You want to see Dan Slott actually do Spider-Man good? Superior Spider-Man good? Spider Island? Shit. But all the character development they did with Ock is going to go down the window for the old-style Ock that's probably the backup copy inside the robot. Which I was not surprised that, you know, you find out that he probably put him in there as a safeguard. But otherwise, I mean, I'm glad to see him back, but if he's going to be a damn clone, which is why I haven't touched this storyline with a 10-foot pole, because you mentioned clone, or I saw on the Free Spider-Man Day, you know, comic book day for Spider-Man, and you saw Gwen Stacy and the Jackal. And it was even hint, you know, just starting a hint of a clone thing again. I was like, I'm done. If the words Spider-Man and clone are put together in any kind of storyline, I'm not touching it. And I do agree. I think it's about time for them to, you know, they've shaken everybody else up. You know, I mean, I will give them credit for giving some sort of stability for Spider-Man in that you got the same, you know, writer on here for quite a while, but it's time. He needs to go on to bigger, you know, better stuff, bring someone else in, and I can't believe I'm actually saying this after I've been trashing the son of a bitch for the last few episodes. I would love to see Brian Michael Bendis on Spider-Man, but they would
you
have
really
to put
want
a load...
that, though? He's no, writing well, a Spider-Man book. He's writing Miles. The people, okay, well, apparently the people want Miles.
You know what? You know what I have to get a kick out of? I get a kick out of imagining this big, like, Marvel board meeting with all the writers and stuff, and they get around
to Marvel
okay.
summons, they have those.
Yeah. But I just picture like the there's one guy leading the whole summit, and then everyone's like decked out in regular casual gear, and you just see Dan Slott all in bright red and blue Spider-Man like shirts and hats and stuff, and he's just like, okay, does anybody want to take over Spider-Man for the next quarter? And you just see his hand shoot up and like wave it around the air.
He also has a Doctor Who pin, probably, because the dude's a huge Doctor Who fan.
And you just see the guy in the meeting go like, and like rub the bridge of his nose, like, Dan, do you want to take over Spider-Man for the next quarter? He's like, yes, please. He's like, okay. Dan, dead Spider-Man, everybody. And just hear a collective sigh. That's what
and
I imagine.
Meanwhile, over in the corner, Bendis is just like, okay, hang on a second while I... Achoo! Okay, that's my next story idea for the next 3 months.
Damn, yeah. Roasted.
Yeah.
Roasted.
We should get, like, that air horn, like, boing, 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 boing.
Maybe if I'm not lazy enough, I'll put that in there, but I doubt that's going to happen. let's move the fuck on.
But
just get Dan Slott. That's pretty much it. Get a new writer. This is news in that you get a clone.
Everybody gets a freaking clone.
Yeah. Worst moment in Spider-Man's history. And it keeps coming back.
Hey, it's just like Captain America with Red Skull and the Cosmic Cube.
At least that shit can be compelling, though. Like, done
yeah,
right.
Yeah, if they do it right. If they do it right.
You can't make the Clone Saga compelling. They've tried several times before this, and each time it's just been muddled shit.
I think the closest time that they did was when Bendis did it in Ultimate Spider-Man.
Oh, even then, that was trash.
Oh, I didn't say it was that good, but I said it was probably the best that they...
Yeah, but being,
I tried.
The being the best of a poop pile is you're still in part of the poop pile. So,
oh, I agree. I mean...
All right, well, let's move on. Brian, what's next on the news docket?
Some proposed television news going on over at ABC with Marvel Television and whatnot. And actually, we can kind of get into this a little bit if you want. But ABC, you know, they're in a bit of a TV rut right now with having recently canceled Agent Carter after season 2. Yes, Iggy, it got a season 2.
Are you sure? Because I'm pretty sure it only had one season.
Yeah, it's either they got a season 2 or it was a mass hallucination. So, I mean, unless there's something in the water supply, I think it happened. But
well, I mean, Flint, Michigan is proof of anything.
Ho!
That's fucked up. I'll admit that was fucked up, but, yeah,
you
but Agent
can't
Carter didn't
see
have
a... our political leanings. But yeah, so after that, and then also having passed on the Mockingbird spinoff series, Marvel's Most Wanted, they only really have Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. going on right now. And so
they
are trying
to be canceled. So
yeah, season 3 was kind of lackluster, but that's due to something else that I can get into when we talk about the other big Marvel TV thing. But recently, the ABC president Dungy came out and said that they're working on some new television shows to come out, saying that they want them to be quote creatively strong shows. Hashtag burn it, Agent Carter. Hashtag burn it, Marvel's Most Wanted, which had Odette Fair and like friggin' Delroy Lindo and. I thought it a pretty solid cast, but maybe that's just me. But yeah, so they're working on some new TV shows for ABC and Marvel. And Iggy, if you want, we can tell them why they won't see them in the movies now, or we can wait for the next segment.
Go ahead and give the explanation why we won't see them in the movies, because I think we can definitely get more conversation out of that.
Sure. So in case you kids missed it, there was a bit of a falling out between Marvel TV and Marvel movies a while ago, basically because they were all reporting to this one dude named Ike Perlmutter, who's a CEO billionaire, and he sort of runs what's called Marvel Creative Committee, which controls all of their TV interests. The committee consists of Alan Fine, our beloved Brian Michael Bendis, Dan Buckley, Joe Quesada, and they're all good, very good friends with Jeff Loeb, who heads up Marvel TV himself. Kevin Feige, however, is not a friend of Perlmutter or anybody else, really, alongside his boys club. So they restructured Marvel Studios, where they would report directly to Disney, and Marvel TV could sort of do what they want. And so that's why some stuff you saw happen where there wasn't as much crossover between the TV stuff and the movie stuff. In particular, you saw Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. less and less touch upon the movie stuff happening. Like, they did the whole Winter Soldier thing during first season. Second season was supposed to be Age of Ultron, which they didn't really get around to doing in any significant capacity. And
they pretty much covered the aftermath, and that was about it.
Yeah, and this season was the same thing with Civil War, where it was just kind of like, it was mentioned, and they're like, oh, okay, well. So that being said, the Marvel Creative Committee and Marvel Studios will not be doing really any crossover in the near future. And that was brought up when Jeff Loeb, I believe, was on a podcast. It was the Nerdist Comic Book Club podcast, where people asked if the Defenders would be showing up in, like, the Avengers or any other Marvel movie property. And Jeff Loeb went on to say that, you know, he... basically, they want to do their own thing, but that there was possible room in the future, but he actually... Jeff Loeb came out and said probably not until at least 2019 is when they would consider doing anything. And, you know, he then mentioned that Marvel television projects are still under the thumb of Marvel Creative Committee and not Marvel Studios. So... it's sort of like, you know, it's like sitting in a lunchroom and it's like the separated cliques or whatever. We have TV over here and movies over here and they don't really interact with each other, you know? And that in itself is kind of a bad thing. But also, Kevin Feige was apparently getting hassled by the creative committee in doing cosmic-type stories. Apparently, the films in particular, like Doctor Strange, Guardians of the Galaxy, the Thor series, Cap Marvel, Inhumans, and whatever. All that stuff was apparently so much more difficult to get through the Perlmutter and the creative committee because he was so vehemently against it. And he was also the guy who was opposed to putting Black Widow on, like, any of the merchandise. So, you know.
Well, he's a fucking old-ass man who's out of touch
with society. Yeah, he's like 80-something years old, and he runs, he's a businessman. He thinks he knows what's what, reclusive, eccentric, whatever you want to call it. But that's also allegedly why Inhumans... got pushed off into, as Bob Chipman called it, it got pushed off into "We'll Get Around to It" land, because there's that crossover between between the movie and the TV stuff going on right now, and they're thinking like, well, if we don't have a stake interest in the Inhuman stuff, why should we bother with the movie stuff, which is what the whole friggin' Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has been building towards, and yet now it's almost going to pay off to probably be nothing. But so that's what's going on in the world of Marvel TV and Marvel movies right now. So... discuss, I guess.
A lot of people give shit to the parent company, the rivals for this, in case Warner Brothers and DC Comics, because they're creating their own cinematic universe, but meanwhile ignoring the arguably the success of Arrow, Flash, Supergirl, Legends of Tomorrow, arguably.
Yes.
And that they've permanently said they're not. And I said, okay, fine. But yet, I yet to see anybody call Marvel on their... like, what's the point of having an interconnected universe when basically the cheaper products... that's not a knock on their quality, because they're very good. At least, you know, Daredevil was really good. Jessica Jones was, despite I'm not a fan of it, as high quality. And so the other shows are really good. What is the point of having an interconnected universe with television shows when you're going to make no effort to cross-promote across? I'm glad the movies are a cohesive universe, but you've gone out of your way to bring the Marvel Universe, open it up, but yet you're not going to acknowledge that? I mean, yeah, you're going to make some throwaway reference, the incident in Daredevil, or my green friend in Jessica Jones, or... the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. have to deal with things. By the way, how the fuck does Tony Stark not know that Coulson's still alive at this point? Like, really?
Oh, well, I hope that'll be addressed in Season 4, because in Season 4 Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., they're back out in the open again. They're apparently a public organization, but okay. Coulson is no longer director because they can't have anybody knowing he's still alive.
But even then, like, you're telling me Tony Stark has fucking cameras watching Spider-Man, but he fucking doesn't have a camera where he's like, wait a minute, was that Coulson? And question somebody about it?
At this point, it's almost a non-factor, Iggy. It's so honestly stupid. It's stupid. You're not alone in this, man.
This whole Marvel television, Marvel movies is a mess. You could literally not, like, I'm glad they don't detract from the experience of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Mm. At the same time, if you're gonna fucking do this. You're telling me it's, like, oh, it's too expensive to get Robert. It's in his fucking contract. It's in Chris Evans' contract. I understand not getting...
What's in his contract?
Probably to do Marvel stuff. I guarantee.
Well, yeah, but if they actually waste him on an episode, that could constitute a movie appearance or whatever. I mean, that could cost them
bullshit.
An entire movie of Robert Downey.
That's so dumb. That's so dumb.
I'm not saying it's smart.
They
I'm
got
just
Nick
saying.
Fury to show up in an episode. Are you kidding?
Samuel L. Jackson, man, and you know he doesn't command the highest paycheck out of all the Avengers, but Robert Downey Jr. I mean, he gets printed money by Marvel. You know, with his face on it and shit.
Fucking do it out of for your fans.
As much
you
as you may want to see that, they're not going to waste their golden goose on a TV, on a lowly TV product. And I'm not, that's not how I feel. That's just what I see. You know, that's how I think they feel. And I think, you know, it sucks, but it's also.
And it makes,
you know,
Marvel television
it's just politics
pointless
right
then.
Now, you know? That's all it is.
I mean, it makes. Maybe not the Netflix series because that's building its own unique thing with Hell's Kitchen. You know,
yep.
So it can stand on its own without needing the Avengers. It'll be a shame if, you know, come 2018, 2019, and you don't see the Defenders in some capacity fighting against the hordes of Thanos in New York City while the Avengers are off-world, because that would be cool. But, like, Agents of the S.H.I.E.L.D. is pretty much just waiting for that cancellation button. It's just waiting.
Hey,
there's no point to it anymore. It was
it's
exciting.
I like it. I think
no,
it's a good
show. No,
you
can like it, but I'm talking about in terms of its importance, in terms of why does it exist other than people who are already watching it. You're not going to create new viewers because the new viewers are realizing, wait a minute, this isn't really connecting to the Marvel Universe. Why the fuck do I care if you're not and they're not going to be invested to these characters at this point. If they weren't into it at the beginning. So, it's a sitting duck. I wouldn't be surprised if this come next year we hear Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. canceled at the end of Season 4 because it doesn't. There's no point to it anymore.
If so, I may. If
yes.
I may.
Yes, just go ahead.
Okay. Admittedly, you are correct in that in it stating its original purpose, it has sort of failed in that regard as it's gotten further and further away from Marvel Cinematic and stuff. Like, you'll see offhand mentions and stuff, and it will occasionally affect the story. Like, the whole thing about Civil War and stuff, with the, you know, legislation of, like, heroes and stuff, that brings S.H.I.E.L.D. back into the public in Season 4, so that's actually ramifications. But you're not gonna see, like, I don't know, you're not gonna see S.H.I.E.L.D. interacting in the Marvel Cinematic, which is a shame, admittedly. But, on the other hand, for a while there, up through Season 2, it was really, from about the fall, or the uprising of Hydra in Season 1 to about the end of Season 2, it was really well-scripted Marvel sci-fi, you know, weekly series.
Debatable.
And, debatable, sure, it's all dependent on one's taste. I really enjoyed it, and it was, I think it hit its strong point, its peak in Season 2. And admittedly, Season 3 has been a bit of a letdown, mostly because I feel like they've kind of gotten away from what was supposed to be the heart of the issue, which is that Marvel connectedness and that sort of exploration of a larger universe. Because we didn't get that. I mean, we got the Inhumans, but now we know that the Inhumans are almost going to be a non-factor in the Marvel Cinematic Universe altogether. So there is that. But I still think, I mean, granted, Ike Perlmutter probably has to die for this to happen, but there has to be some bridge of connectivity between the two. You know, they have to make an effort to sort of reach out and sort of, you know, bridge the gap, because I will concede that it has done a very poor job of that, especially in the last two seasons. Season 1 did it pretty well with the whole uprising of Hydra, but Season 2 and Season 3 were very, very weak in the regards of Marvel connectedness. So, yeah, I mean, I will defend the show, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., until dead and cold and whatever, but I will concede that in its original premise, it has failed in that regard. And maybe Marvel TV is to blame, because who knows if it would have been a stronger series had they been allowed to dabble more inside the broader Marvel Cinematic, you know, or maybe it would have still always maintained the same level of quality, you never know. But, yeah, I mean, I don't have much more to say about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but as far as, like, the Netflix stuff goes, I'm kind of with you in regards of, like, yeah, they're doing their own thing with the whole New York City thing, so they can kind of keep their own little mini-universe or whatever. And I think, I mean, I'm not sure it's for the better, but I think it sort of restricting it initially, you know, should, is important, because then you can kind of grow it out and let it become its own thing, and then you can bring it into the, you know, the cinematic, if you wanted to. I mean, I don't think we'll see it, but it would be nice to see it. But Ike Perlmutter, I think, probably has to die first. Okay. So.
John, what do you think of this whole scenario?
Oh, well, I'm being that I have not seen hide nor hair of Agent S.H.I.E.L.D. at all, or Agent Carter, because since I'm on the Dark Ages right now, antenna TV, I don't get ABC where I live, so I don't get to watch it. But I do say that if they were going to try to do this connectedness, they should have done it and stayed with it, or they should have done like what the competition did and established no ifs, ands, or buts, that the TV series are separate from the movies, do not share the same continuity, just say say multiverse, go with it from there. And then that way you're not causing any headaches or, you know, and story problems where, like, yeah, I agree, Tony Stark should have went, hey, why the fuck is Coulson alive and no one told us? You know, that kind of thing. And it just otherwise, I'm just like, man, don't really care. The only show I want to see out of this bunch is Agent Carter when I can find it on DVD, because I like Carter. Otherwise, meh. The more I hear about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the less I'm interested. I might still try to find the first season, but not as a ghost writer.
Second season as well
in.
Is very strong, John. I will defend the first two seasons to my dying day. But season three, I mean, season one starts very case of the week and then evolves into something more when they finally get to the Winter Soldier stuff. And season two is strong almost all the way through. Season three is a very weak link, though. I will grant you that. Mostly because it focuses way more on the romantic relationships and stuff. I remember someone, I think it was Bob Chipman, actually. He referred to it as Agents of Ship, because all they do is ship people together in season three. It's like rife with that. So every story revolves around a personal relationship. So, but hopefully they'll do a little bit better with season four with the Ghost Rider and whatnot coming on. So I don't know. We'll see. Yes, yes. I know you don't care, Iggy. Jerk.
I'm the host, so therefore.
Well, I'll give it a try.
All right. Anything else before we move on to the final bit of news?
I'll give it a try. It's just, like I said, otherwise, meh.
Okay. Any other final words?
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 1 and Season 2 are really great.
No, they're
try
not.
Try them out. No, yes, they are.
Arrow Season 1. Arrow had a better Season 1 than fucking Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. did. And that's saying a lot. Because that's basically Batman Begins.
The back half of Season 1 knocks out the whole first season of Arrow, hands down. Yeah.
There's hotter women than Arrow. Don't deny that.
You don't think Chloe Bennett is tasty, or Elizabeth Henstridge, or Ming-Na
Wen? But the women in Arrow on a whole nother fucking level, because they make them look hot.
Hey, Elizabeth Henstridge in that schoolgirl outfit, I will take that all day, every day, sir.
I can't think of the actress.
Chloe Bennett in a wet dress? Hello! What? And Ming-Na Wen is so scary.
Yeah, she's aged like a fine wine. She's
she is so majestic.
Let's move on. We got one final bit of news, and apparently the Raging Cajun, that's his nickname, isn't it?
I don't think so. I think that's James Carville, the political analyst.
That's what I'm thinking of. Okay, the Cajun himself, Gambit, there's problems with this movie again. What are the details, Brian?
Well, as you know, Simon Kinberg, he's part of Fox's cabal of mutant writers and stuff. You know, one thing that gets pointed out is that Fox draws from a very limited pool of people to work on the X-Men franchise. You know,
Bryan Singer and Simon Kinberg.
Yeah, Bryan Singer, Lauren Donner runs the pretty much across the board. Simon Kinberg is another one. He's a big script writer guy. And apparently, you know, he's trying to develop a Gambit script that really fits the voice of the character. You know, the character has, this is a direct quote, the character has such a specific voice in the comic in the same way that Deadpool has a specific voice in the comic, that we want to make sure that we capture the voice on the page. Keeping in mind, he compares development of Gambit to, he likens it to Deadpool, but in the way that it was a 10-year development plan of people just constantly like pushing it to see the finished product and stuff. So, I think it sort of goes in a roundabout way. Simon Kinberg's like, yeah, we'll get it down in like a decade or so. You'll see it then, or something like that. I really hope that's not the case. But pretty much what it shows is that there's just script problems, and that Kimberg, I don't think, really gets the character, or really is devoting the time or effort necessary.
Or maybe Gambit is just not meant for a leading role.
Like, that could be it, like, but...
I understand Gambit is the Raging Cajun, and he... Well, he's not the Raging Cajun. I'm going to call him the Raging Cajun, though, because this is what I'm... Fuck it, that's the title of the episode, Raging Cajun.
No, that's lame.
What? Okay, fine, whatever. It'll probably be a different one anyways. Fucking buzzkill thing over here. But anyways,
Agents of Cajun?
I'm gonna cut you off right there from the news segment.
Ouch!
Gambit does have a je ne sais quoi about him, a very sort of odd charisma about him that makes people draw to him. I mean, heck, he was arguably the most popular character from the X-Men animated series in the early 90s. Everybody wanted to be Gambit or Wolverine. But since then, Gambit is not relevant. Gambit isn't relevant anymore. Like, Deadpool has been relevant since at least, 2002, 2004?
Since Secret Invasion, so 2005, 2006.
Yeah, so I just don't think a Gambit movie is the right way. I think you get better traction with a fucking Jubilee movie, or even a Cyclops movie. But I just don't think, even Channing Tatum, who has some star power behind him, I just don't think people are gonna flock to the theaters to go see the Raging Cajun Gambit. I just don't think it. I think he fits better in an ensemble cast working on, maybe if you call it Gambit and Rogue, you know, make it a buddy love, make it a Thelma and Louise movie, but with a man.
If Thelma and Louise girl. Were lovers.
I mean, yeah, basically. I mean, they were pretty much gay for each other anyway, so why not?
Very true. A lot of gayness.
Yeah, there you go. There's your pitch for a Gambit movie. Thelma and Louise, but with Gambit and Rogue. Seriously, that's what's missing to me. Like, you can't just throw Gambit out there and expect people to care about, oh, my je ne sais quoi, my thief background. Nobody's going to give a shit. They want to see Gambit with his squeeze, and that's Anna Paquin as Rogue.
Want to see a little bit more than that from Channing. They want to see Channing Tatum's je ne sais quoi like they saw in that Magic Mike movie. You know what I'm saying?
He's just going to make another Magic Mike movie. They don't... And I'm pretty sure they'll be shirtless.
Oh, if he's not, it'd be a foolish thing. I mean, they made Ryan Reynolds shirtless in that fucking movie before they fucked them all up, you know, so...
Yeah. So, yeah, my call is that Gambit is not leading superhero worthy. Like, he just doesn't have... to have his own movie, which isn't wrong, but like focus on I would rather them do another Fox, do another team X-Men that's not connected to the central X-Men, but like, you know, like we said before, like New Mutants or X-Force or something like that, where you have an ensemble group, that way you don't have to rely on the strength of one character, but rather the ensemble as a whole, like Suicide Squad this past weekend. So yeah.
Yeah. I'm sort of with you, Iggy. I don't know if it was because I grew up being, you know, part of a culture that everybody kind of, you know, disliked, but I've never been drawn to the characters who were immediately the most popular, so Gambit never really resonated with me. I mean, I thought his French accent was the stupidest fucking thing in that animated series, like, honestly. But the character did grow on me. Of Rogue's many love interests, I prefer Gambit to almost anybody. Especially Magneto, because that's just all kinds of fucking weird. But in terms of Gambit movie, seeing it brought to the screen and stuff, I mean, Channing Tatum was an interesting idea, and he does seem very committed to doing the role, a la Ryan Reynolds from Deadpool. But I'm not sure if it's there in the same way that the Fox was for Deadpool, you know? And almost... I agree with you again, Iggy, in the terms of he's better as an ensemble player, you know? And if you wanted to do something with him that showcased his bad boy, whatever, do a movie that starts him off leading the Marauders or something like that, because I think that's how he was originally introduced, wasn't it? He was part of the Marauders?
Yeah, I think so.
So,
no, he start him off... He wasn't part of the Marauders.
Yeah, he was.
Well, that was later, but that's not when he first showed up.
Fair enough.
He was just a mysterious thief that encounters Aurora when she's a kid. Again.
Okay.
Late 80s, early 90s, yeah.
I would still make him the leader of the fucking Marauders and drop him into the middle of an X-Men movie and then have him sort of brought over the same way Storm was. You know, Storm joined up with the X-Men in Apocalypse and whatnot. You know, people don't have to stay good or bad. You can do both. And I think him being a bad guy... Your name sort of determines who you are.
Well, I mean, his name isn't Apocalypse. His name is En-Sabah-Nur, so...
Doesn't that translate to Apocalypse?
No, it means the first one.
Oh, okay.
Fake Egyptian, damn it.
Look, I could give a shit about Gambit. Channing Tatum playing the character was the only thing I really had going for me in this race. So if his movie never makes it to the big screen solo, I won't be heartbroken. If you want it to be as an ensemble movie, all the better for it, because I don't have to just focus on him. All I can say is, the only way you could probably get him to give less of a shit is if you call Taylor Kitsch back to play him after that fucking X-Men Origins Wolverine movie.
Hey, if he was a better director, I think he could have been a good one.
I don't think so at all, and I think Taylor Kitsch's track record proves that. John Carter of Mars, anybody?
He was fine in John Carter. What the fuck are you
he
talking
about?
He was
terrible.
No. That dude's leading man material. Hollywood fucked him over.
He is... not okay. He was in fucking
Tim Riggins.
He was in X-Men Origins Wolverine. He headlined Battleship and fucking John Carter of Mars. Excuse me. No.
I will never forget you, Tim Riggins. You will forever run in my life.
What, Friday Night? Oh, that's why you're sympathizing with him, because he was on Friday Night Live.
He's leading man material. Damn it.
He lacks charisma. That is what he lacks.
You clearly didn't watch Friday Night Lights. That man is all...
No, I didn't, because I don't give a shit about high school football.
You like teen dramas, though.
Well, I mean...
it's a teen drama first.
I don't really like teen dramas.
Motherfucker,
I mean,
let's move on. John, what do you have to say?
I'm Degrassi over here, bitches. But anyway...
Hey!
That show's awful.
I know what you want... motherfucker.
You're not
better
even young enough. You're not even old enough to appreciate 90210. Don't bring that nonsense in here.
I watched the CW reboot of the show, god dang it.
Get your punk ass out of
here. That
didn't
exist.
Please.
That does not exist.
John's the only one here who can actually claim nostalgia for 90210.
Okay, I'm gonna
are we arguing about drama shows now? God damn it. Young and the Restless Forever,
That's more of a fuck I give about than I do the Gambit movie. From day one, it's just been, you know, okay, we're going to make it. No, we're going to be delayed. Okay, we're on filming. No, we're going to be delayed. I don't see it happening. And the longer it takes, the less hope I would have for it. Let Channing Tatum play him in a main X-Men film or in like an X-Force and be done with it.
Cool.
Otherwise, bleh. The more I hear delay, I'm like, go away. There you go. Yeah.
Look, at the
Degrassi
very least,
rules.
Degrassi. The least you could do is, since they're already promoting Mr. Sinister for the next X-Men flick, they could throw Channing Tatum.
Yeah. When the fuck did
that happen? Well, you saw
the end scene?
The end of Apocalypse. It went to
I still don't understand it to this day.
What, Essex?
Is that what it said?
Yeah, it said Essex. It's Nathaniel Essex.
I was busy looking at the damn vials. Like, what the fuck do the vials mean?
Those were Wolverine's blood.
Well, yeah. I mean, I thought it was...
I meant X-23 back in the day. But
whatever.
I mean, it could be both. Maybe Sinister creates X-23. I don't fucking know.
Maybe
it creates Gambit.
But if you're going to bring in Sinister, you could just as easily bring in the Marauders and have Gambit leading that crew and just have him transition.
Can we get... what's her name? Not Vertigo. What's the one that causes, like, weird, like, makes you all nauseous?
Oh, Vertigo.
Is that Vertigo?
That's Vertigo.
Yeah. There's two characters in the Marvel Universe and DC Universe named Vertigo who do the same thing. Wow.
Yeah, there's only so many ways you can take Vertigo, though. I mean, sort of shoehorn yourself into a certain kind.
How does the copyright work on that shit?
Well, one's Count Vertigo, and he's a dude.
Oh, that's probably what it is.
And the other is Vertigo, and she's a woman.
Yeah.
So, maybe. I don't know.
Probably.
Something like that.
Either way.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is how bad the week is.
Yeah, we're just tangents.
Vertigo from the fucking Marauders winds up in our conversation.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's get into individual reviews because fuck the news this week.
Woo!
John is actually going off the reservation by technically not reviewing a Marvel book,
Traitor! Traitor to the cause! Hang him!
The property was a Marvel book in, what, the 70s? 80s?
70s and 80s.
It was a property that was licensed out by Hasbro to Marvel. It's Marvel doesn't own the rights no more, despite people claiming for it, but this character has its own series. Once again, after how many years has it been since we've had this series?
Since like 87, I think.
So a little over, close to almost 30 years.
Jesus Christ. No news this week. ROM Space Night, we're talking about Vertigo. This show has Vertigo right now. This is no which way is up. This is...
Bono, we're going to get sued by Bono for using the music.
Okay, this is... This is just showing how bad Marvel has been the last couple of weeks
the
for me on not being
back.
Able to fight.
What the fuck is going on? The Micronauts are back, aren't they?
But, the Micronauts are back. They're also in the same universe as ROM, along with the Transformers and Mask and whole other bunch of things. But anyway.
Wait, Mask is Dark Horse, though. What the fuck?
No, different kind of Mask.
Oh.
Not the Hasbro Mask, not green,
not
Jim
green
Carrey
guy.
Style, no.
Okay.
Yeah. Alright, ROM Space Night, or ROM Number One by,
Does ROM stand here. For anything?
No, it's like, just his name. He's,
it's not an
ROM,
acronym.
Lord of the Soul Star Order, and ROM the Wraith Slayer.
I thought it was an acronym all this time.
Yeah. But, yes, years ago, ladies and gentlemen, and boys and girls, there was a title called ROM Space Night, which introduced legions of space knights looking for the most evil of evils, which was the Dire Wraiths. ROM happened to land on planet Earth.
Yeah. I mean,
the Dire Wraiths.
Bad, but I didn't think they were that bad. Continue.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, I'm being immature.
That's all right, but ROM having been a major Marvel title or Marvel run, and it was involved with the X-Men, a few other things. In fact, his impact in the line was pretty good because X-Men actually had a few times with the Dire Wraiths popping up and stuff, and then there was a major character called Hybrid. It was a half wraith, half mutant character, and he was kind of hideous. But this is the beginning of a relaunch they're doing over at IDW, and Land of the Multiple Variant Covers and everything. And ROM is landing down. These two police officers are responding to a call of the what looked like to be a meteor, and to find out that the military is already there. Well, the military isn't actually the military. It's Dire Wraiths who are masquerading as humans because they realize that ROM has landed. And people are going, what the hell? And ROM's like, confronts them. They shoot him. Bullets bounce off. He's speaking in the weird language, and then he's like, I'm not here to harm you, as in, it's like halfway through and it starts turning into English. And then I see you for who you are. Does the recognizer, which, can destroy any disguise that reveal anybody that's not human for what they are, Dire Wraiths. And unlike the Marvel version where he would use his disruptor to banish them to limbo, here he just straight up annihilates their asses. And this one Dire Wraith goes out like, arms out and absorbs the blood from one cop and accidentally strikes this female cop by the forehead, grazing her, and absorbs the blood in order to use blood magic.
Is
Rob turns into a
fucking robot vampire or something?
He's a space knight. He used to be human, converted into a cyborg robot.
What's up with the blood?
What's up with the what?
The blood.
What was up with what?
The blood, dude.
Oh,
blood.
The blood. The Dire Wraiths use blood, human blood, for magic. Sorcery.
Oh, fuck.
And, they're a little blood. They're a little bloodier than they are in the original Marvel, even though in Marvel they were kind of rough. Basically, he runs right through them. The female cop is like, runs off, staggering, and the one Dire Wraith says, you've been marked, you'll be not hard to, you'll be hunted down, and because she's now able to not necessarily see them for what they are, but she can hear them talking as Dire Wraiths and sense that they're not human. And then ROM's like, okay, this is not right, I gotta figure out what I need to do. Runs into this family who's they're attacking that are trying to do something to their daughter. It turns out that most of the family have already been turned or wraiths. She's like the last human of the entire town. And Rom confronts them, and then the Dire Wraiths are like, no, we've been here too long. Even the planet will rise against you. And Rom's like amazed at with their magic they've been able to turn trees and grass into wraith kind, so to speak, that tries to attack him. He blasts all that, and he winds up destroying the entire town. And it was caught on social media and stuff by real humans, so they think he's a big threat. They're like, this alien robot is killing everybody. And he manages to save the girl and explains to her that what's going on, because apparently she's marked as well, you know, kind of like a special leftover deal from the attempted takeover by the Dire Wraith. Essentially, so Rob's going to be the bad guy in this, you know, to the general public. You then see this military who these people interrogate this one lone soldier. They find out what happened, and then they're like, oh, okay, well, we'll just have to deal with it in our own way. And it turns out they're Dire Wraiths. They kill him and basically convert him into a Dire Wraith. End of the issue, they go to this special plane that just landed. A couple people come out, and they're going to deal with they've been requested to handle Rom. You see Scarlet and I think Roadblock from G.I. Joe.
And, what the fuck?
They're going to have G.I. Joe and Rom confront each other in issue 2.
What the fuck?
Hasbro, they're doing the Hasbro-verse now. So you're going to potentially going to see Rom confronting Transformers, the Mask, the Micronauts, the stuff that we didn't see in Marvel proper, you're going to see proper in this series. I got this for nostalgic reasons, and I asked to put this on here because there literally was nothing else to read Marvel-wise. I'm going to give this one a shot. That doesn't mean I'm going to stop reading Marvel, obviously, but I do recommend it for anybody out there.
Turn into an IDW podcast. That's what's happening.
Yeah, that's fine if we want to do that. But anybody that wants to read good old, you know, a run of a good old of comic from Marvel, go find the ROM.
Can you even find those? Because I imagine there's problems with reprinting those, considering it's.
Oh, you can find them in the bargain bin.
Oh, you know, really? They're not that hard to find.
It shouldn't be that hard to find, and especially the later ones where you actually get to see Steve Ditko doing art.
Oh wow!
You know, in later part of the run, yeah, and it also involves some major X-Men characters getting involved, along with a couple other power players. Now, granted, that's obviously been retconned the hell out because, you know, licensing, much like with Godzilla running rampant through Marvel.
We don't talk about the time the giant lizard destroyed half of New York City. We don't talk about it.
Yeah.
We kind of fucked up at that point.
I give this one a 4 out of 5 Warriors, and I'm picking up issue 2 and see how they do with the rest of this other. But, and I do apologize in my old age that I get them confused.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. Rom is back. He's not a Marvel character anymore, but he's officially back. Could we get Rom versus the Ghostbusters in? Could that happen? Probably.
That would be nice. I would love to see Rom run through the Ghostbusters, yeah. I think he could.
I mean, they're just dudes after all. Okay. I will be tackling Doctor Strange number 10, the Last Days of Magic, the finale to this epic arc. And it's pretty much a drag out brawl between the Inquisitor, the leader of the Science Inquisition, as I'm calling them, and Doctor Strange has little to no magic left. It's basically one big fight, and between Doctor Strange and the guy, and this guy they're fighting. And it turns out the guy, because he is weak to science, to magic. Like, magic literally not just hurts him on ow, you just hit me with a battle axe, like more like Superman reacting to kryptonite. Sort of thing. It's a brutal fight. It's a drag out fight. And even that monstrous thing from the previous issue that's made up of like 100 eyes and has that weird creepy mask, comes in and actually helps Doctor Strange, and in sort of in circles around him and basically forms as this sort of magic super armor thing. It's really creepy because it's like all these little mouths just sort of going nom, nom,
nom, nom, nom. Ocelot renders it really well with his art style.
So creepy. And the face is so creepy. So, you know, everybody gets a third eye. You get a third eye. You get a third eye. Everyone gets a third eye. Stephen Strange is able to capture the leader of the science superstition and basically imprisons him with magic and sort of that sort of case. And then the weird thing is that the thing that he was, Stephen originally was holding in prison there is now basically just walking the earth. Sort of just like really creepily, like I think I would have a heart attack if I ever saw that thing in the daylight. Like, it's just like, I thought being free would make me feel, what's the word, happy, but instead I feel nothing. Perhaps I'll try vengeance instead. And like, people notice it's there. It's not like the other magic things were like, oh, we don't see it because it's on a higher level of existence. No, people are noticing it. And if I ever saw that thing in real life, I'd be like, I would shit my pants probably in public at that point, because like this is too much. This is too damn much. But
can I just say, the entire time they keep mentioning this Inquisition, all I keep hearing is fucking Mel Brooks's The Inquisition from History of the World. That's all I hear.
Inquisition.
Let's begin the Inquisition. Look out, sin. We're on a mission to convert the Jews.
Convert the Jews.
Oh, Mel Brooks, you're amazing. Okay, but you would think, hey, they stop the science inquisition, the fight is over, but it's not like an on switch, like it's not a happy ending, which I kind of am glad it didn't happen. So there's resolution in that, yeah, they stop the virus, but the bleeding is still happening and magic is still depleted. There's no magic left. Like, well, where did it go? What happened? So it closes one chapter, yet it, like any good serialized story, it gives you something to keep going on to. And I gotta tell you, man, Jason Aaron on this book is just, for the past 10 issues, has been a fucking godsend. Like, this book has been out of the park since issue one. And the fact that Chris Bocciolo has drawn every single issue, it's just, mwah. It's so good. There's not a perfect artist today who can capture that Steve Ditko weirdness from the 60s and take that, make it his own, take that, modernize it, yet make it his own, and bring some extremely disturbing magic images to life. Doctor Strange number 10 for me gets a 5 out of 5. I loved it. I'm going to be so sad when this book is canceled. But I'm gonna keep riding this fucking train until it's over. But yeah, go read this. Go read the series. If you're a new Doctor Strange fan, because of the trailers, I honestly encourage, this is the most relevant Doctor Strange you'll probably read, and it tells you everything you know about the character. It puts you in a pretty big epic story right away. So that's always cool for you newer readers out there. So yeah, man, it's perfect. It's how the French say it. It's like having sex on the Titanic, but then it sinks because of the iceberg, you know?
Iceberg is the Lumi cancellation?
Yes.
I sympathize with that, buddy. Very truly.
I guarantee it's gonna happen once that movie, like maybe like 2 months after the movie. This just in, Doctor Strange canceled issue 18. I'll be like, you know what? I got 18 issues of Doctor Strange series. I'm good.
You're getting an annual, too. They're doing a Doctor Strange annual issue.
Yeah. All right. But let's close it out with possibly the creepiest cover of the week, possibly of the year, with Moon Knight number, was it 5?
Yes, number 5. Moon Knight number
5. What the fuck's with that cover? I need to ask that question.
It's I don't even fucking know. I don't know. It's like his skin's like inverted, and it's like weird. It's pretty fucked up, yeah.
I almost picked the book just to see what the fuck was going on. So it's a striking cover, nonetheless.
Yes, it is. And it's the final part of the first arc of Moon Knight, the first new arc, Welcome to New Egypt. It's the closing out of the inaugural arc where Moon Knight is trying to figure out what's going on with New York, because the Egyptian gods are apparently invaded, and he doesn't know who's behind. Well, he knows Set's behind it, and he's going to try to stop him, but he's never quite sure anywhere along the way if he's just crazy or if this is all just some sort of actually, you know, actual takeover happening. And so when he's on the steps of this great pyramid in the center of New York City, which is being buried in sand, and he's about to go confront Set, he's stopped by none other than Moon Knight. And Moon Knight the entire time is telling him that, you know, you're insane, you're going to hurt Marlene, because Marlene, you know, his love interest is with him through this journey. And Mark Spector and Moon Knight actually fight on the steps of this pyramid, and the entire time it's happening, Mark is trying to you know, defend that he is actually sane and knows what's happening, but it gets harder and harder for him. And as he's winding his way through this pyramid, it's like a bad acid trip where he's tripping through all the personas he's ever had with his split personality disorder. So he trips through the Jake Lockley persona, and he trips through the Stephen Grant persona. For those of you who don't know, Jake Lockley was the man on the street cab driver, you know, kind of rough and tumble guy. And Stephen Grant is the billionaire playboy version of Moon Knight, I guess. The closest to Bruce Wayne you can imagine. And what I love about this issue is that on top of getting Greg Smallwood as the artist, because his art is phenomenal in this entire run, it's fantastic. For each different persona, they got a different artist to come in and do the layout. And they couldn't have picked better, because what you have is for this one really weird persona where Mark ends up on the moon being chased by wolves, which is really kind of just Moon Knight typical fare at this point. But that's drawn by a guy named Wilfredo Torres. He came in and he drew that, or was that James Stocco, I think, actually. Yeah, Wilfredo Torres, I think, did the Stephen Grant stuff.
And Wilfredo Torres is an amazing artist. I didn't know he was drawing this.
He only does a few pages. That's the whole point. As he trips through personas, you get different artists. So, yeah. Wilfredo Torres does Stephen Grant. James Stocco does the Knight of the Moon, which is that persona where he's on the actual moon is called. And for Jake Lockley, they got Francesco Francavilla, I think is how you pronounce his name. Yeah, Francavilla. Yeah, so... Francavilla. Yeah. So you get these amazing art styles. What?
Francavilla.
Yeah, okay. Francavilla. Chaka Khan. Yeah. He trips through the different personas of Moon Knight, and he's trying to find his way into the pyramid in the central chamber to try and find the guy. But you get these amazing interiors done by these great artists, and when he finally comes upon the center chamber, he finds Set, the god of darkness, the mastermind behind it, is in chains, and actually it's Khonshu, who is the one that's been plotting the overthrow, and that he's been using Mark to knock off the other Egyptian gods to sort of clear the path for him to take power in the Egyptian pantheon. And it was Khonshu who was dressing as Moon Knight and sort of fucking with Mark. And it turns out, hey, it was all a test, because you're a strong body, son, but your mind is fractured and weak. But my mind is strong, and I'm the head of the gods now. So, being my loyal servant, Mark Spector, you give me your body, and you can pass on and die in peace or whatever, and give your fractured psyche or your rest or whatever. And Mark Spector rejects this, and... best way for him to get out of it, he is convinced, is to jump off of the top of the pyramid and kill himself. So he does that. He kills himself. And you see his body bleeding out, buried under sand. And then he wakes up in the Stephen Grant persona as drawn by Wilfredo Torres. And now he's a film producer / actor, and Marlene is his actress girlfriend, and he's living in a seemingly idyllic life. And that ends the issue of issue number 5. So, Mark is still fucking crazy, if any of you were wondering. but yeah, so the whole arc ends with the question mark of, did that really happen? Is Mark really crazy? Was it just a dream? Was it just that, the other? And honestly, having read Moon Knight for as long as I have, I'm even starting to lose track of exactly what the fuck is going on in this book. Granted, the potential of Wilfredo Torres drawing the interiors for the next arc, if Stephen Grant is the main persona, and if it's just Wilfredo Torres, I will be all for that, because give me more of that. But the question now is sort of, what is going on in Mark's head. Did he really die? Is he just, like, being... Is he put in a fantasy world by Khonshu while Khonshu inhabits his body? Like, what is going on? So, it's really sort of, like, a big question mark to end the first arc. And admittedly, I wouldn't have ended it that way. It's not the strongest ending. But then again, the book is being written by Jeff Lemire. So, you know, it's going to be weird either way. But I like it because it's weird in that it has me, who has read Moon Knight for a long while, questioning what's real and what's not in the book. And I think that's a really strong telling point for the story. So, I mean, overall, I really enjoyed it. And the guest artist interiors were to die for. I mean, Francesco Francavilla, his art was amazing. And Wilfredo Torres has such neat and clean lines. And even James Stokoe, who did the Moon stuff, was like...
Oh, James Stokoe did pages for this issue?
Yeah.
Holy shit, dude.
He did a few pages, yeah. This is like artists you can't get to do a regular series. You got them to come out and just sort of do like little 3-page runs for this issue. And so it was really kind of cool to see that. And I thought it was a really good way to compliment the fact that you're chipping through all these other personas and whatnot. So I thought that was really good. Again, though, not the way I would have ended it, but I like the fact that I don't even really know what's going on. I think that sort of spells out for me the fact that this story is going to be, you know, a little more complex, which is what Jeff Lemire is good at. He's good at off-kilter, off-beat kind of crazy stories, and I think he kind of shines in that regard. And as we talked about a couple weeks ago, Iggy, when we were talking about Extraordinary X-Men, when Jeff Lemire sort of boxed into what is considered normal, the storytelling, you can see, kind of suffers a little bit, you know?
A little bit, yeah.
Not much, but there's still something to be said for letting a guy like Lemire do kind of something crazy. And I think it helps that nobody really gives a shit about Moon Knight, because he can still kind of do what he wants inside of a superhero story and still have it be a superhero story. And Moon Knight seems to have been made for his writing style, because Moon Knight is as batshit crazy as some of the stuff Jeff Lemire has written. So I think it was a great read. Admittedly, again, I wasn't crazy about the ending altogether, but in the same breath, I kind of loved it, and the interiors are really, really good. But if you're not a typical Moon Knight fan, I mean, like I said, I'm a Moon Knight follower, and I had trouble kind of following what was real and what isn't. So I'll probably give it a 4 out of 5 just for that reason. I mean, the interiors alone are worth the price of admission, but the story itself doesn't fall, but it stumbles a little bit. So not the strongest ending, but 4 out of 5. If you're just, even just flip through it for the quick interior shots, because honestly, Francesco Francavilla drawing downtown dingy New York in like the late 70s, early 80s is something he was made to do. And James Stokoe doing werewolves fucking chasing Moon Knight was great too. So I'll end it on that positive note, in that even if you just want to flip through it on the rack, I recommend it, because the interior artwork is to die for. So
good books, positive vibes all around. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it for this episode of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. Just an FYI, we got a little special segment coming next week. It is an election year, after all. So, next week, we will be giving our presidential and vice presidential candidates for the 2016 election representing the Marvel Universe. Each of us will have we'll have at least a vice president and a president, and we'll give our platform at the end of next week's special. So if you have any, who do you think should run the United States in the Marvel Universe, write them in the comments below, or tweet at us at twitter.com/warriorsupcast, or write them on the Facebook group as well. For now, follow me at twitter.com/marvelousiggy, and I can officially say this now, I am a paid member of Nerdcore. If you really want to support my endeavors, head over to nerdcore.online, where I will be writing 2 blogs a week dedicated to comic books and comic book movie news. So last week I wrote a little thing on the negative reviews that Suicide Squad was receiving, as well as the Legion trailer that sort of went under the surface from all the San Diego Comic-Con madness. This week, I have already 2 blogs ready to go for this week, but just got to do some rough editing. But head over to nerdcore.online if you really want to support me. It's an F, and I'm not going to lie, it's a paid gig. So if you want to show your support, please go read them. They're not long. They're meant to be bite-sized, so you can enjoy them while you're getting your cup of coffee or while you're waiting for the bus. Nerdcore Online. I believe there's an online, there's even a mobile friendly version of the website if you just use it on mobile. So go check it out. Also head over to thegreenlanterncore.com, where I still write for them. Out of my love for Green Lantern, you can check out my reviews on Green Lanterns, Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps, as well as Justice League. So those are fun. And finally, I'm back to Twitch streaming on a somewhat regular basis at twitch.tv/iggy2814, where we're currently streaming Golden Sun, The Lost Age. We're coming up to the finale of that, so if you're in the Golden Sun, come check that out. It's been a good time. We're going to end it pretty soon. Also, from there, from my Twitch channel, you can find my YouTube channel, where I'm currently doing a Let's Play of Mario & Luigi Superstar Saga, and that seems to be heading into Endgame 2, so if you want more of that, go check that out as well. I think that's all I'm doing for the internet besides this podcast. MarvelZiggy.wordpress.com, where you can go check out a fun movie commentary that Mr. Dragon and I did on Bring It On. Yes, that cheerleading movie, Mr. Dragon and I did a commentary for it. So if you want, go listen to that as well. Brian, you want to close us out?
Sure. I mean, did you push my Twitter already, or did I just miss that? You didn't push.
No.
Did you even try? Oh, okay. You did promote a lot of your own stuff this week, so I guess I'll give that a slide. We're over at the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Pop. What?
I have a lot of stuff I'm doing.
I know you do, buddy. All right, I ain't judging. We're over at the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel podcast on Facebook. We're also on Twitter, though God save me if it ever actually gets used. I'm on Twitter at No Mr. Powers, even though I rarely use it, but I am the herald of the weekend, as Iggy often, you know, points out. When it's Friday, I go tweeting like crazy, or retweeting rather. So you can look out for that, I guess. And as always, we're on the greenlanterncoremessageboard.com. The message boards are where I usually lurk, and Iggy and John will sometimes pop in as well. You can come check us out there. And that's really all I have to say, except that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 1 and Season 2 are really top-notch storytelling stuff, so I think...
Get off the stage. Get off the stage.
I can just imagine, like, that Kane reaching to pull me off stage, like, no, wait, I have more to say.
Wrap it up.
Just same thing. I try to help Brian and Taser with the Warriors 3 page on Facebook. I'm Gamera Sith on Twitter. When I do get on Twitter, I talk about multiple things, wrestling, Kamen Rider, that kind of thing. I do have a WordPress site called The Kaiju Samurai, and a Journey with the Kaiju Samurai, and I do try to maintain a consistent blog there, but recently with all work and stuff, it's hard for me to do. Otherwise, I'm just floating around the interwebs. That's it.
You're just looking forward to SummerSlam. I think a lot of us are.
I also have been trying to keep up with the G1 Climax tournament over in New Japan Wrestling. But, it's a headache. I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it for this episode of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. Please do us a favor and leave us a comment or rate us on iTunes. It's always appreciated. Or comment below. Mention us on Twitter, tag us, whatever. As the censors tell us, we have to go. Now I'm getting the pull on me. Thank you for listening. We will see you all next week for episode 240?
Yeah.
240. We will see you next week for episode number 240 of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. I'm Norman Siggy. That's Brian Powers and Jonathan Cartwright. And remember, folks, stay marvelous. Have a good night, everybody.